This is the Mike McFeely Show on Live Local First, 790 KFGO and KFGO.com.
This is how bad the Minnesota Vikings have become, Pinto. This is how bad they've become in the 2013 season. Until I saw some tweets going out earlier today saying that Leslie Frazier had named Christian Ponder as a starting quarterback Sunday against the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field, I had no idea the Vikings were playing the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field. And it was Wednesday at about noon. That's how far the Vikings have fallen off my radar. That I didn't even know. It's Packers week. It's Packers-Vikings week.
Worst Vikings team you've ever been alive for. Is this
one?
It?
This one or 1984? Les Steckel. Les Steckel was the head coach in 1984. They won three games that year. And they were just awful. Now, they won three games a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
But they weren't, I mean, they were bad, but you didn't think they were going to stay bad for very long. 84 was awful, and this year is awful. And I'm not sure they're going to be much better next year. So this year in 84.
Okay.
And they're starting Christian Ponder quarterback on Sunday because Leslie Frazier says he gives them the best chance to win.
I think he misspoke. I think it's he gives us the best chance to have the best draft pick in this next year's draft.
I like the way you're thinking. Folks, welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Mike McFeely Show on the mighty 790 KFGO. And it is time, as we do once a month, although the Chief begs and begs and begs to do it more often. Twice a week he'd like to do it. But we only do it once a month. We don't want to overexpose him. His name is Keith Turnus. He is the police chief for the great city of Fargo, North Dakota. Hello, Cowboys fan. How you doing?
Better than some Vikings fans, I think, but not much.
Have you ever been to the new Cowboys Stadium?
You know, I have not. It's on the bucket list at some point, but no, I haven't been down there to the new one. I had an opportunity to go to the old one a couple of times, but not the new one.
If you're looking for somebody to borrow some money from to be able to afford to go down there, there's a guy in this room to our side here who apparently has money falling out of his pockets because he was just recently down in Dallas. Or is it Arlington where the new stadium is, to go to the stadium?
I understand that. Obviously, you and I are running in the wrong circles. We can't...
I know I am, yeah. Can't speak for you, but I've got a lot of circles that I'm wrong in. But yeah, that's so good. Good luck to you. I hope you get down to Cowboy Stadium
Thank
someday.
You.
How's your team doing, by the way?
I've obviously a bunch of my coworkers, probably not unlike yours, huge Vikings fans. Mm. I feel bad for them to a certain degree.
No, you don't.
I do. I really do. But and maybe the only reason is because I think there's a fair amount of sympathy they throw my way, especially in years like this and recent Cowboys history. So it's a give and take relationship.
Vikings fans wouldn't be so bad if they weren't so unbearable when their team is doing well. How about that? And I'm speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for the police chief or the Department of Fargo. But Vikings fans get a little over the top when their team is say 15-1 or 13-3.
Monday mornings at the police station can be brutal on both sides of that equation. When they're very successful, you hear about it, and when they're not so successful, it's crickets.
Here's what we're going to do up until 3 o'clock, like we do once a month with the chief, is we're going to take your phone calls. If you have a question about law enforcement or a law or something about parking or anything on your mind about law enforcement, specifically in Fargo, but I think even more in general, you can certainly give us a call. 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. Or you can text us at 35270. A couple things that were at the top of my list, Chief, that we can start with are, well, burglaries, first of all, and then the words home invasion always scare me. That's a phrase to me that for some reason seems incredibly frightening, that my home is being invaded by a stranger and you don't know what the hell's going to happen to you or your family. So why don't you start there? There's been a rash of them is in the news, but there's been a few for sure.
There has. It didn't happen here locally, but one of the things that's magnified this idea of home invasion and robberies is the incident that happened just west of Grand Forks, either earlier this week or over the weekend, that actually resulted in a homicide. And obviously anytime somebody is murdered anywhere close to Fargo, of course, that captures our attention. But here's the one thing about whether we call it a home invasion, a burglary, robbery, whatever the case may be. Here's one thing I want people in Fargo to really keep in mind. And that is that there's no question we do have a burglary issue that occurs within our community. In fact, it's one of the crimes that we're very likely to see an increase in this year compared to last year. But there's two aspects of this. Number one, and I'll start out with the simplest, and that is most of our burglaries where an unknown person comes into your garage or your home or your apartment or whatever the case may be, is more often than not the result of just a crime of opportunity, so to speak. In other words, somebody left their garage door open, they left it unlocked, and they really didn't take the necessary precautions to ensure that their property was secured. And so in a lot of those burglaries, it's not a case of where somebody's got a pry bar and they're forcing their way through your front door. It's where they happen to be walking by your home, your garage door is left open, your golf clubs, your lawnmower, your kid's bicycle is right there for the taking. Somebody walks in, takes it, and rides off. We don't, as a general rule, we do not have issues where somebody is actually forcing their way into your home in the middle of the night. And the two recent home invasions that we did have where that actually occurred is a product of individuals. The resident of the apartment or the home and the people who are forcing their way in, they know one another, and more times than not, it really has some relationship to drug activity. So when we hear,
you owe me money for the drugs I gave you,
pretty much. I mean that's
I'm coming into your house to get it.
That's pretty much what we see in some of these more when there's that violent component to the burglaries that we see. So when people see and hear about that by way of the media or otherwise, I hope that they at least keep it in the proper context, that this is not some stranger who in the middle of the night is forcing their way into somebody's home and then using a weapon to threaten them. When those situations occur, more often than not, it's got some relationship to drug activity and the parties know one another. Those are the issues, the violent issues that are happening here.
What is the definition of home invasion? I think it's maybe self-explanatory, but what's the difference between a home invasion and a burglary or a break-in? Was the old school term that Joe Friday used to use. What's a home invasion?
Well, a home invasion is really where you have somebody who either by way of force or they are, you know, they're allowed access into the home, and then they use violence to either intimidate or rob the people who are in the home. Whereas a burglary is something as simple as, again, walking into or forcing their way into somebody's home or garage for the purpose really of taking property out of it.
So you said that this year that you're going to likely see a rise in burglary crimes in Fargo. Why? Why?
Well, I think the primary reason is because, again, we are still combating the real lack of prevention. A great majority, and we'll probably be in the neighborhood of 500 to 600 burglaries throughout the city for this year. And I would say a great, at least half, maybe even more than half of those are those instances where, again, property has been left in an environment where it's unsecure.
50%?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah,
I mean, so if people would just lock things up or put their kids' bike in at night or not leave their golf clubs leaning up against their pickup truck or in the driveway or whatever the case might be. You'd cut in half?
We'd cut it in half. I have no doubt in my mind that that would be the case because, again, what we have let me set the stage for you, Mike. When we deal with especially residential burglaries, the dynamic that occurs is you have, and I don't want to stereotype here, but it's usually young people. Or young adults that are out and about for whatever reason, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and they happen to walk by and there is somebody's garage door standing wide open with, again, lawnmower, bicycles, golf clubs, everything just right there. And it becomes easy for them to just walk in, take it and walk off. Those are generally the crimes the burglary crimes that we're dealing with here in the community. It does happen and it has happened. Where we have had somebody who has forced their way in through a window or cut a screen window to get into somebody's apartment. From time to time, that does happen. But that is not even close to being a majority of the burglary cases that we deal with.
Last question before we need to take a break. And I think I've asked you this before, but are there roaming gangs of thieves that go throughout neighborhoods and wait for the opportunity to steal stuff out of the back of trucks or open car doors? Because it would seem to me that if people are leaving their garage doors open, if you're a thief of opportunity, you just kind of walk up and down some streets and kind of keep an eye out and do that.
I think in some cases there is that calculation that takes place from would-be. Hey, I've got nothing better to do on a Friday or Saturday night. So at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, they'll just go out and they'll roam through neighborhoods. And when they find that open garage door, they'll go in and take whatever they want. But I think more often than not, what we have are individuals that, again, for maybe they're going from party to party or whatever the case may be, but they happen to be out late at night and it's like, hey, look at that garage door is standing open and there's a nice set of golf clubs, or I need a new lawnmower. It's right there for the taking, and they go in and grab it.
Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, our guest on the Mike McFeely Show. We will take a break. We have a couple of emails. Turn that up, Pinto. We have a couple of emails coming in. We'll get those to the chief, and we'll talk more. And we'll always take your phone calls, too. 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. This is KFGO. Are our phone numbers, or you can text me at 35270. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus in studio with us talking some cop talk. Any questions about law enforcement or anything happening in the world of crime and enforcement in the city of Fargo, please give us a call. Email comes in, Chief, and this is regarding to the situation out in Leith, North Dakota, not specifically, but more of a general question. It says, Mike, could the chief explain the open carry laws in Fargo? Would it be legal for a person to carry a long gun on the streets of Fargo as those two guys did in Leith, North Dakota?
You know, Mike, and I'm going to speak to just as the police chief, the answer to the question is, yeah, it's legal. It's legal, and it's concerning to me because the and let me preface this by saying, look, I am a full supporter of gun rights, all of that. I don't want to diminish the Second Amendment in any way. But, you know, the legislature made some changes to some of our gun laws here. One of the changes that they made was that individual cities could not come up with laws, ordinances that are more restrictive than the state law. And so what that did in terms of how it affected Fargo, prior to the last legislative session in Fargo, if you wanted to carry a weapon out in public, it had to be in a case. So if you went from your car into a sporting goods store to buy a gun, trade a gun, have some service work done on your gun, you obviously could do that, but the weapon had to be in a case when you went from your vehicle through the parking lot and into the store. If you wanted to walk down Broadway, that firearm had to be in a case. Well, the legislature undid that, at least as it applied to Fargo City ordinances. So now there is that open carry atmosphere where although the weapon has to be unloaded, of course, how do you tell
that? How can you tell if it's unloaded?
Yeah. So it has to be unloaded, but yes, you could walk down a city street and openly carry a weapon, and that would not be against the law. You can imagine, and here's where my concern comes from. You can imagine in today's atmosphere where we have school shootings and mall shootings and that type of thing. Again, fair or not, people, if they see somebody walking down Broadway with a rifle over their shoulder, the emergency, the 911 lines are going to light up instantaneously, and we're going to have to respond
as
to
they
that.
Should, by the way, in my opinion.
And so, even though it hasn't happened, that potential is there. So, again, back to the question, it would be lawful. Somebody could do that.
Our legislature is really smart in North Dakota. I really like our legislature. That's just my – they really do some very bright things. Let's go to the phones. Gerald in Fargo, you have a question for Chief Turnus. Go ahead.
Yes. I live along 18th Avenue South, just south of South High. And, you know, they have the softball complex there. I've always thought it funny that they could drink after the game right on 17th Avenue there by the high school. There's some permit that they're getting, or is that how's that monitored?
There is. In fact, for sanctioned softball leagues through the park district, they are able to get a permit that allows them to not just possess but consume alcohol out in the parking lots adjacent to the softball fields.
Okay, Gerald, thanks for the phone call. It says it's not your department, right? That's...
Well, not our department, but it is a legal activity.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus in studio with us until 3 o'clock. Well, Welcome back to the Mike McFeely Show on the Mighty 790 KFGO on this Wednesday afternoon. Our phone numbers are 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Fargo Police Chief Keith Ternus in studio with us until 3 o'clock. If you have a question regarding law enforcement or crime or traffic or anything else in the city of Fargo, or in general, do give us a call or email us or text message us at 35270. Going to go to the phones, Chief, and find out what Roger, who is on the road, wants to talk with you about. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Chief, say I have a question for you. Here, about a month or so ago, there was that issue with that Sandusky that got pulled over for DUI. And I don't know if I followed the story or missed something on it, but it was my understanding that he declined to test. He refused to test.
That's true.
And I thought that I read in the paper on a follow-up that he didn't lose his license. I guess I was under the impression that a test refusal was an automatic license revocation. Is that true?
Well, the penalties for refusing to take a test subsequent to a DUI arrest are exactly the same as if you had taken a test, were over the legal limit, and got convicted of DUI. So, and this question, this question was presented to me a couple of times in the wake of this, and I made it a point to check with the city attorney's office, and Mr. Sandusky received all of those same penalties, just as if he'd had taken the test, up to and including the loss of his driver's license.
Was that license then a loss for a year?
I don't think so, because when he pled guilty to the not taking the test offense, the penalty for that, just like had he pled guilty to a DUI conviction, there's the monetary fine, and I think for a first-time offense, the loss of license is only 91 days. So I believe he lost his license, but just like he would have for a DUI conviction, the 91 days.
Okay, well, that answers my question. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks for the phone call. How long has those types of laws been in effect, where if you refuse a test, that you can still be cited for the same penalties as if you had failed the test?
Yeah.
Is that right?
In North Dakota, that went into effect. That's one of the changes the legislature made as well this last session. So went into effect in North Dakota just since August 1st.
Okay.
Minnesota, and I also believe South Dakota, have been in effect, those laws, for several years.
And I don't, that's fine. I'm against drunk driving, but, and they've clearly been tested constitutionally, but how can you give somebody penalties for refusing to take a test, which would mean that they would not have been proven guilty? You're admitting guilt by refusing a test.
Yeah. Well, you're not so much admitting guilt. What you're doing is you are impeding the prosecution process by not supplying that blood sample that would tell us exactly what your blood alcohol level is. And I know that sounds contrary to the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination and all of that. But the one thing you have to remember is that in North Dakota, not unlike other states, when you obtain a driver's license from the Department of Transportation, part of that deal by getting that license is that you, the state who issues you the license presumes, and you are agreeing to the presumption that you are going to provide a test if there's enough probable cause that suggests you're driving under the influence. So there's already that existing presumption that you, the driver, will take the test. And when you defy that presumption, there used to be just an administrative penalty that went with that.
Sure.
Now the state has made that criminal.
Because I'm guessing back in the old days that you'd get pulled over for drinking and driving, and you'd say, no, I don't want to give you a test. I haven't been drinking. No. And what could the cop at that point do in the 1960s or 70s? Anything?
60s and 70s was almost nothing. I mean, if you didn't take the test, there wasn't a lot that could be done. And then as we rolled into the early 80s and 90s, there was that administrative penalty where if you didn't take the test, you would lose your license for that 1 year period, but you could cure that, of course, by pleading guilty to a DUI offense.
Okay. Email comes in with a question for you. It's rather lengthy, so stick with me. It says, Mike, in years past, the U.S. Bank Plaza has not had anywhere from 7 to 10 homeless people at the same time sitting there under the tree in the warm months. This past summer, it's been awful. They harass pedestrians, spit all over, get drunk, panhandle, etc. They even assaulted a couple of women about a month ago when they were sitting in different places. I believe it was so bad this year that there's a policeman riding a bicycle around town. it goes on. It says, why were police not doing that this year? And is it possible to have them around as before? And I apologize, but it kind of got convoluted there. But it sounds like there's homeless people hanging around the U.S. Bank Plaza. Yeah. In the past, maybe you had some officers there patrolling. This year, you didn't, it sounds like.
No.
According to her.
Well, still do. Okay. And she's right, or the email, the messenger here is correct. We do have an issue downtown with some of our homeless population. We do have an issue with people who are consuming alcohol in public. There is some panhandling that takes place. But we do have two officers specifically assigned to the downtown area to deal with those type of issues. They, in the summer months, they are on foot. They ride bicycles. Sometimes they're in plain clothes. But make no mistake, there are two officers, and they were assigned down there last year or throughout 2013, just like they have been in the past, looking for those type of issues.
Is it a big problem? Because to me, it's, you know, I hear a lot, well, these panhandlers are bothering me, and they're bothering to me, and I'm not a downtown guy much anymore, but it never seemed to be a huge problem. Once in a while, you'd have somebody who clearly was down in their luck, clearly had been consuming something of some kind, and they ask you for a couple of bucks or whatever, but is it a major issue?
It isn't a major issue. In fact, it certainly shouldn't dissuade anybody from coming downtown. Does it happen on occasion? Yes. But, you know, the incidents, at least those that are reported to the police, are far and few between on a monthly basis. And then, of course, as we move into the colder and the winter months now, that problem will naturally take care of itself. But in the spring, it'll come back and we'll have to deal with that. But not a great problem by any stretch.
Another email comes in, says, Mike, I have a question for the chief. While making a turn, do you need to pull into the first available lane or any lane? I think it is first available, but others and my wife think you can pull into any lane you want. What is the law?
Well, you are supposed to work your way into the inside lane. So if you're making the right turn, you're supposed to move into the lane closest to the curb as you're making that right-hand turn. If you're making a left turn, and of course we're presuming that we're working on a two-lane roadway here, when you make that left turn, you got to be in the lane closest to the center line. And make no mistake, that does not happen very often.
No, no, no,
but
it doesn't.
That is the rule of the road.
It's a law that you have to signal as well, I'm presuming, correct?
Well, you wouldn't think that exists either throughout the... But
exactly.
Yes.
You have to signal. It's against law to turn and not signal.
Yes.
Okay. You can give us a call, 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Text message question says, Mike, why don't the police more diligently stop and perhaps ticket vehicles that violate the sound ordinances, or the noise ordinances, I think is what they mean.
Well, there is some ticketing that takes place there. We actually, earlier this summer, we extended the noise regulations that used to apply just to the downtown area, and now they apply in any residential area of the city. And there is a fair amount of enforcement that takes place, but you know, anybody who travels around Fargo throughout, especially the summer months, you're going to stumble across that vehicle.
Motorcycle. I'll be honest, mostly motorcycles in the summertime. And what is the law? What is the rule? Because it ticks me off.
Well,
some guy's got a big Harley or something that no muffler on it and ticks me off.
Motorcycles, they actually are prohibited from modifying the exhaust system beyond the way they were manufactured. Now, you would say, well, that's every motorcycle out on the roadway. And obviously, there are some examples of where it is so obvious that it makes it pretty easy for the officer to take enforcement action. But I'm here to tell you, we don't teach or train officers how to inspect a motorcycle to see if the exhaust has been modified. So, I mean, it's not as easy to enforce as you might think, but there are some obvious violations that take place.
Text message comes in, says, Mike, can you ask the chief how often they do a text sting around the NDSU campus?
Just did one here within the last couple of weeks. We had a couple of plainclothes officers that were specifically at they were at the 12th Avenue and North University Drive intersection. We wrote a handful of tickets for texting, some red light violators as well. We're going to be stymied just a little bit here by the winter months because, again, some of the driving activity violations, they seem to dwindle a little bit when we get into the colder winter months. But the texting, texting enforcement plans will actually, they will continue. And my hope is that we will be able to increase them because texting continues to be a very prevalent problem here in the community.
Going to take a break, and we have one more segment left with Chief Turnus. If you want to call, you certainly can, 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. 880-5346. One segment left with the police chief of Fargo, Keith Ternus, here on the Mike McFeely Show, doing our monthly bit that we do. Our phone numbers are 237-5948 and 800-880-5346. All kinds of text messages. I hope these people are not texting and driving to get in their text messages for us. This one says, Chief, what are the rules for cyclists on the roadways? They never stop at stop signs or follow the rules. When I hit one of these people with my vehicle when they don't stop at a stop sign, I will go to jail.
Not necessarily.
don't encourage them. don't give them any ideas, Chief.
But I mean, again, another frustration that that we hear about with some frequency, and that is that, you know, bicyclists are, in fact, supposed to follow the same rules of the road as anybody else. And do they always do that? No. But, you know, again... And I've said this before, and it sounds pretty lame, and it's not intended to be an excuse. But I will tell you, when it comes to things like those bicycle violations, the not using turn signals, the not turning into the appropriate lane, those are clearly violations, no question about it. But to be quite honest with you, and really all of your listeners, I just don't have the resources to tell officers, look, you need to focus your time and attention on those. It's just not a good, effective use of the limited resources that we have.
I agree. And if bicyclists are so confident and or cocky that they want to ignore traffic laws, go right ahead, because that you're going to lose if you take on a vehicle. Well, and I'm not being flippant about it. I kind of am, but it just, you're not going to win those battles.
Well, in some ways you're right. The bicyclists who are just, you know, throw caution to the wind. I mean, you're right. The risk of getting hit by a car, they're going to lose that conflict every time. So it really is incumbent on them, you'd think, to for their own safety, to be paying attention to those rules. And you know what? On the flip side of that, do we have people that are driving cars that are not the safest when they encounter bicyclists? Absolutely.
We should put bike lanes in Fargo. I bet that would help alleviate traffic problems with bikes, don't you? Let's
Next
go
question.
To a phone call. Alan in Fargo. Alan, you're on the Mike McFeely Show with the Chief. Go ahead.
Yes, I got a problem that I've always had in my mind. There's a law that says that you have to drive your car with your seatbelt on. In fact, you get a ticket if you don't. And it's always bothered me that we have to have a law that says that we have to have our seatbelt on when we're driving a car. And we do have a certain amount of protection in the car, but I feel that law enforcement does not take a lead, and I think they should, in trying to go to the legislature or whatever to try to get a law passed for helmets on motorcycles. And people just don't seem to give a damn about that, and you don't have any protection.
Well, Alan, thank you.
Well, you won't get any argument from me in terms of really the need from a safety standpoint relative to helmets and helmet use being a primary law. Law enforcement, just like on several other fronts, law enforcement has been out at the legislature lobbying for that. Law enforcement has actually lobbied for a primary seatbelt law here in North Dakota, and there just isn't the political will for either of those things to occur. So I don't disagree with the merit of having those laws. But where I do disagree is where to suggest law enforcement hasn't taken the lead. Law enforcement from across the state, out at the legislature every 2 years, strongly advocating for those type of laws.
Almost gets to a point where I think some law enforcement people would stop going out there because they never seem to make any headway in certain areas.
And you might be looking at one of them. I get incredibly frustrated with some of the lack of support for some of these, what I would consider to be fairly common sense type of issues.
Speaking of seatbelts, a question comes in and says, I have a 1964 vehicle that has never had seatbelts. Am I required to install some to be legal, or is it grandfathered in?
It is grandfathered. Vehicles that were manufactured without them, and there's a specific year, and I want to say it's 1965, but it could be wrong about that, where if the vehicle wasn't manufactured with seatbelts before that time, no, then you do get that exemption.
Let's go back to the phones. Otto in Fargo has a question for Chief Ternus. Go ahead, Otto.
Hey, Chief, did all the charges finally get dropped on Travis Beck?
Travis Beck, the NDSU player? Yeah, I think yes, they yep. did. Well, no, he was, cited for...
I think he was cited for resisting the police officer,
yes.
and he pleaded guilty to that. But
he
the
did,
more, yeah, but the more serious charge involving the assault was dismissed.
Perfect.
Okay,
thank you.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Yeah, because the original charge was a felony assault charge, yeah. but that got dropped down to a municipal resisting the officer. Email comes in, Chief 48 says regarding panhandling. Why must the police witness it in order to do anything? There was a man outside the Empire yesterday stopping cars to ask for money and harassing people on the sidewalk. I told the employees after that I had been harassed by the man, and after I left, the man, very angry, followed me. Does it have to escalate to assault before it is addressed?
No, but to answer the question about arrest, it's a misdemeanor offense. So in order for the officer to make an immediate arrest, they have to witness the violation take place. But... that's not to say that we cannot take a police report, try to capture as much information about what occurred, send that to the city prosecutor, and if they feel it warrants prosecution, then they would charge that person. But, you know, a lot of those type of cases is dependent on, are there other witnesses? Is there something to substantiate that the panhandling actually took place? If it comes down to one person's word versus the other, those are very difficult cases to prosecute.
Text message asks, is it legal for motorcycles to ride side by side in one lane?
Yes. Again, there are some requirements. I mean, there's some distance and following and those type of issues. But when you see motorcycles, for example, going down the interstate highway, riding side by side is not unlawful.
A case recently about a guy who got in an accident because he hadn't scraped off his windshield. And we're getting to that time of the year with snow and with frost. Is that illegal to not properly scrape off your windshield? And if you're a police officer, as the chief, would you advise them if they see a car come at them with a little hole about as big as a quarter scraped in their windshield like people are wont to do? Would they stop somebody and cite them for that?
That does happen. Again, not with a lot of frequency, but your windows have to be clear. Your windows have to be clear from frost and whatever. You have to have that clear line of sight. And really the danger there, if you don't scrape them off and you get into an accident, number one, you face some potential civil liability and your insurance agent is probably going to take issue with it.
Last question or last statement, as long as we're to the winter type of talk here, please remind people to not leave their keys in their vehicles running, correct, at gas stations or stores, because speaking of crimes of opportunity, vehicles have a tendency to drive off.
About 250 cars stolen in Fargo every year, and 220 of them are because of that.
Really?
Absolutely.
That many?
Absolutely. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's. I mean, even though it's there, that's gutsy for somebody to take a car.
Yep.
Jeez. Okay. Yep. Come back next month.
Be happy to do it.
Absolutely. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, thank you very much, sir, for coming in. Always good to talk to you.